banded together from remote galaxies are 13 of the most sinister villains of all time, the Legion of Doom, dedicated to a single objective, the conquest of the universe. Only one group dares to challenge this intergalactic threat, the Super Friends. Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is the Challenge of the Super Friends.
Welcome to Comic Culture on 93.3 CFMU-FM and podcast at comicbookdaily.com. We are your hosts. I am Walter Duralia, and I am joined, as always, by the illustrious, illuminous Chris Owen, professor of comic history.
Illuminous.
At Hamilton's Mohawk College.
That's a new one. I didn't realize I was lighting the night sky, but you know what? With us here today, we have our actual people that contribute to comic book culture here, and I forgot what I was radio show I was on here, and that is, of course, Anthony Falcone, who is our producer and our engineer, Mr. James McIntosh. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Walter, as of course we know, today is Wednesday. This is the new comic book day. So what have we got going on?
Well, as always, we're going to...
Hold on. I forgot. New this week has been brought to you by...
Is going to be brought to you by
the Weaponers of Quard. When you need implements of destruction to crush your enemies, you better buy a Quard.
Wow, Chris. Yes. Wow, that's got me taken aback there. New this week, every Wednesday, we want to. We know people are rushing into their local comic stores.
Rushing.
We know that they're kind of confused on what to pick up this week, and that's what you and I are here for, Chris, is to guide them and maybe give them some advice on things to try.
Right, and that is what we're here for, right?
It's a community service you guys are doing, really. If it wasn't for you, fanboys would just be stumbling around the streets. They would have no idea what to pick up.
Now hold on a second here. James, you're a bit of a comic book guy. Are you a fanboy? Are you stumbling at any point?
Not really, no. I tend to get my information by just what I look at in the store before I purchase.
That's good, as you should. And, of course, you do listen to comic book culture.
I do.
And we do... help you out in that regard.
A little bit. I'll say that. I don't know if I would base all of my purchases on the recommendations given by Comic Culture. But
this is a smart young man, Chris. This is a smart young man. All right, listen. I'm going to start off. I don't know. I think I always start off with Marvel. I don't know why, but maybe next week. I promise I won't start with Marvel. But Marvel has X-Men: Curse of the Mutants, X-Men versus Vampires, number one, hitting the stands today.
Well, yeah, you know what, and this is, of course, I'm of mixed opinions by this. One, you know, why not have the X-Men go against vampires? But come on, like, really, it's all I'm getting vampired out, man. Like the Twilight thing, and everything just seems to be vampired. True Blood is on a TV show on the air now. Like, man, enough vampires already.
You know, and in theory, I would actually agree with Chris that there's too many vampires out there, except for the fact that this concept's pretty good, right? Like having Wolverine fight a vampire is a good concept.
Hold on. Did you actually just say Wolverine fights a vampire? That's a good, in your opinion, that makes for a good comic. That's what you're saying.
He cuts off a vampire's head.
That's what you're saying. Vampires versus Wolverine is a good comic. That's good reading.
I'm sorry. It should have more Power Girl in it. Then it would be good reading.
I'm just saying. You know, I don't know if vampires need to be dominating the comic book world.
You know, the problem is you guys don't have an opinion on this.
That's the real problem.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe if Anne Rice writes this, it'll be good. But, you know, the thing is, though, guys, vampires are popular. The X-Men have always been popular. guys and girls are going to walk into comic book stores today and pick this book up.
Now, here's the thing. If you had told me that it was Wolverine versus like the Tomb of Dracula comic character vampire type, I'd have no problem with that. But you know what? I'm pretty sure that there's going to be a myriad of all kinds of different vampires going on, and I just don't know if this is just another play at trying to get people to read about because it's vampires.
Have you even read any of this?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like you have.
Right? Like, this is...
Well, how can you read it? It's just coming out.
What? No.
Like, their actual core title, X-Men, with the story arc, Curse of the Vampires. This is based on...
That I haven't read.
Right? Dracula is killed by his son.
Is it the same Tomb of Dracula?
Yes, yeah. It's Dracula.
I don't know.
And he needs to join X-Men.
Is it drawn by Gene Colan?
No.
Okay. You know what? Yeah.
Sienkiewicz. No. All right. Listen. Point is, this book has buzz.
It has buzz from us.
Buzz from us.
Absolutely.
And it will be one of the books people will be checking out this week when they head into their shop. Now,
all right.
Another book coming out from DC today is something I highly recommend. And it is Star Spangled War Stories. And it's got a great cover by Brian Bolan. And it's about Mademoiselle Marie, guys. Now, anybody here in the room know who Mademoiselle Marie is?
No, but if it's old and crummy, then you know about it. So,
that hurt.
Ouch! This hurt me. This coming from our producer. I don't know if I like that so much.
Now, Mademoiselle Marie was a character basically from the late 50s, DC Comics. She was a French resistance fighter that happened to wear a cute little beret and have like fishnet stockings while she was fighting the Nazis.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that in my mind. And and basically DC is bringing her back in this title.
So does she have any superpowers, or is her only superpower that she's French?
She, her power over men is her only power.
Right.
And isn't that really the best power anybody could possibly have?
Right, yes.
Didn't DC cover that with Power Girl, you know, with the power of her chest or what?
Hey, hold on. This isn't going to be a slam Chris's fascination with Power Girl show.
You know what, Chris? Now, this is something that I don't know. Like, the problem with DC, and Chris and I discussed this last week, is, man, you look at their new this week lineup, and man, you're just like, you're scratching your head, and which thing do I pick here?
Well, I know. You know what? But generally, you know, when it comes to the Batman titles and when it comes to the Superman titles, there is lots of great stuff out there. So in no way am I trying to slag DC. There's, every once in a while, they come out with a week or two that is a little weak.
Now, and I mean, we also should mention for everybody that just the way that Wednesdays fell in September, September is a 5-week month, which actually means that this will be the worst week this month for comic releases. Like, there's just the least amount of anything comes out. Yeah. So it isn't really even the company's fault, because they're trying to produce 5 weeks worth of material instead of the normal four.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, this is nothing new. I mean, usually on the fifth week... I remember when I used to work in comic book stores, normally a store would get like 80 titles or something like that, or 60 titles. And I remember there was some weeks where they'd be like literally like 30 titles coming out. So generally the fifth week of any month is a pretty low run month.
Guys, Star Spangled War Stories with Mademoiselle Marie. Check it out today. Also coming out today, Eerie Archives, Volume 4, the hardcover. Now, Dark Horse, I want to talk to more about Dark Horse's foray and success with all these prestige format hardcovers of all the Warren, EC stuff. I mean, this is like probably the 18th, 20th volume.
Well, yeah, you know what? I don't know necessarily about EC, but they certainly have done a lot of the Warren publications, and they certainly did, you know, with their rise and republication of the Conan material and all that kind of stuff. That's been absolutely phenomenal. And I think that you know, they've done Creepy, they've done Eerie Vampirella. No.
But didn't maybe I could be wrong here, but I believe they've also done the Tales of the Crypt, Tales of...
I don't think it was Dark Horse that did that. I don't know. There are hardcovers that have come out with those of the Tales from the Crypt.
Right.
Before,
okay. I just don't know.
I don't think it's Dark Horse that's come out with that. I know for a long time it was Gladstone Publishing that had the rights to that, but I don't know who owns the rights now. So,
But, well, savvy and in the know listeners can maybe email us.
Yeah, and you know, and that brings up a good point. If you do happen to know who is the hardcover publisher of the EC material, you're more than welcome to email us at chris.owen@mohawkcollege.ca or at mailbox at bigbcomics.com.
We are always happy to give out a no prize to our listeners. So yes. Anytime you want, you know, email us.
Did you know what the no prize was? Now, I'm asking you, Anthony Falcone, as our producer, do you know what the no prize was?
I thought it was an empty envelope that they mailed to you.
That is exactly what it was. You know, when somebody wrote in to correct one of the Marvel publishers, Stan Lee, I don't think it was himself, but you know, Stan Lee would say that you were eligible for a no prize, and of course you'd get an envelope filled with nothing. But it was an envelope saying from Marvel Comics, basically saying, you know, hey, thanks for the information that you've corrected us in something that happened from Marvel Comics.
Wow, that's great. I would give them a promise.
Well, yeah,
I would say, hey, well, we promise you this, and just never deliver.
And you know what? This is a fantastic segue into our next musical interlude, which happens to actually be by the Justice League of America. So it's always good to hear from Batman.
Call the roll, call the roll, call the roll, call the roll, call the roll. Justice League of America.
Superman
here.
Aquaman
here.
Wonder Woman
here.
Flash
here.
Metamorpho
here.
Plastic Man
here.
And Batman
here.
Yeah, here they come. Hey, look out, chum. It's the Justice League. The Justice League.
Superheroes always on the ball. It's the Justice League. The Justice League.
It takes big trouble with a capital B. A super colossal calamity. A tremendous, stupendous catastrophe. To bring them all out swinging. And when they're swinging, man, they're bringing big trouble with a capital T. For any super enemy on Earth or in space or land or sea. Hey, do they put on a show anywhere the four winds blow? When they get the call, watch them go.
The Justice League, yeah, the Justice League. Oh, the Justice League.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our regular program to bring you a special broadcast direct from the secret sanctuary of the Justice League of America. Addressing the council at this emergency meeting is Superman.
Fellow members of the Justice League, the world is under attack at this very moment by the most powerful forces man has ever seen. Creatures from space, monsters from the depths of the earth, and criminals operating right within our cities. And they must be destroyed before they destroy the world. Operation Lifesaver is in effect as of right now.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you with it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. You know what to do. The whole world's watching and counting on you. And all you people listening out there, everybody, everywhere.
Hang on, hang on, hang on.
The Justice League is coming. Here we come, hey, look out, chum, it's the Justice League, the Justice League.
Superheroes always on the ball, it's the Justice League,
the Justice League.
There's big trouble with the capital B, a super colossal calamity, a tremendous, stupendous catastrophe. And here we come out swinging, and when we're swinging, man, we're bringing big trouble with the capital T for any super enemy on earth or in space or land or sea. Hey, do we put on a show anywhere the four winds blow?
When we get the call, watch us go. The Justice League, yeah, the Justice League. Oh, the Justice League, that's the Justice League. Yes,
that, of course, was from the off-Broadway production of Justice League. Great tune.
I have got to get Chris some new CDs. It is just, I gotta do it.
Now, Chris, I don't know how you do it every week, but that is a tremendous segue into our next feature of the show, which is industry news. And I'm happy to report that Anthony Falcone, our producer, has brought a sponsor for industry news, which our guest today, James, will read.
Industry news is brought to you by Spidermobiles of Hamilton. If you're in the market for a new car that climbs up walls, why not try a Spidermobile?
That's excellent. James, I'm sorry, Anthony, are these guys good for the money or what?
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, they're perfectly good. I think we're getting even paid in dollars this time.
Whoa!
You know?
Excellent. Well, hey, guys, industry news. I wanted to start off with some big news today coming out of DC Comics.
Big news.
Big news.
Big news.
Big.
DC has announced that Robert Harras has been named.
Otherwise known as Bob Harris to anybody else who's
Robert Harras. Robert Harras.
Has been named.
Why are you putting the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable?
Or maybe, yeah, maybe Robert Harris.
Let's
whatever.
Stop harassing me, yeah. Guys. Come on. This he's been named editor-in-chief, VP of DC Comics. He will be in charge of DC Comics, the DCU, Mad Magazine, Vertigo. But, guys, he's going to be reporting to co-publishers Dan Didio and Jim Lee.
Right, which I think is very important because it seems like those two guys are still sort of the ones in control of what's going on in the DC universe.
Now, Chris, for all of our listeners, if you could explain a little bit to them like what exactly the editor-in-chief does as opposed to just a regular editor on a comic book.
Well, yeah, the editor-in-chief was going to – I mean, an editor on the comic book will actually look over mistakes for the comic and make sure there's continuity and everything going on. But a lot of times
– We need an editor on the show.
We really do. We really do. But a lot of times what happens is there'll be multiple issues going on at the same time. So an editor-in-chief wants to oversee, make sure that everything's happening with the right characters at the right time, and it's sort of an overall producer of the whole kit and caboodle of what's going on at one time, right? So it's he's not just an editor, but he oversees the whole everything, right? So he's got an extremely important position.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, this guy, though, I'm reading up on this guy, and apparently he was editor-in-chief at Marvel.
Yes,
from,
he was.
From 95. Yeah. Into the millennium.
You know what? The sad part about that particular issue is that Bob Harris came into a time when the collector craze for comic books was really on decline, right? So he was in an era of comics where, man, just before that, you could basically publish anything and people would buy it, right?
You're right. He came in 95 right in the thick of the crash, right?
Yeah, let's not forget, okay, in 1990 we had Spider-Man on its own coming out by Todd McFarlane. In 91 we had Jim Lee's X-Men coming out. So we had all these new comics coming out in the early 1990s. And then all of a sudden, and so everybody was collecting things. People were buying multiple copies. I think it was 7 million copies of X-Men number 1 were sold by Jim Lee.
I think that had 7 covers.
Yeah, it did. It had like 7 covers. You know, it was ridiculous. So, you know what? By 95, the whole crash of the Marvel Comics universe was coming down. And here's this guy, Bob Harris, comes in and has to inherit all this stuff. And he has to go ahead and try to do something with it. And this is also at a time where just prior and just during, we had the whole Spider-Man Clone Wars thing. A lot of horrible, horrible stories going on, and unfortunately he had to inherit it, and you know what, he did what he could, he did the best he could at the time, and I think he did an okay job because he kept the industry alive.
Well, I mean, what I think we all can only hope is that in bringing back Bruce Wayne will now be actually a clone of Bruce Wayne that was replaced 30 years ago by Ra's al Ghul.
And he'll be called Ben Reilly.
Yeah, like I mean, I can only assume that's where this is going to go, really.
You guys have totally lost me.
That's because you're an old comic guy. You got to get some of the newer comic book guys.
Right. Well, no, but you see, this guy was in charge, though. This guy has done good work. He was in charge.
He's done bad work too.
Well, okay, but hold on. He has done
polarizing figure.
He has done a lot of great work as well. Because let's not forget that he also inherited the company when, close to that time. I don't remember exactly what time period it was, but Marvel Comics was also offered as a stock around that time too, so the public could buy Marvel Comics as a stock.
Yeah, I think they went bankrupt.
Well, it started out, I mean, about $35 a share, went up to immediately to about $80 a share, and then eventually went bankrupt. But that's a whole – the owner was Ron Perlman at the time, not the guy that played Beast from Beauty and the Beast, but a different type of Ron Perlman who was a penny stocks trader. A different type of Beast in its entirety. However, what I'm trying to say is that I think Bob Harris inherited a Marvel company that at the time was fledging, and I think he did a great job in keeping it alive.
Right. Now, hold on. This Robert Harass guy, how about Dan Didio and Jim Lee? Like, are they going to – like, what – help explain to me why they're there and why can't he make all the decision? Why does he have to clear it through them?
Well, okay. So Dan Didio, he has done like him or love him. He has done phenomenal work for
like
the company.
Like him or love him.
Those are your only two choices.
Your only two choices.
Like him or love him.
Love him or hate him. How's right. that sound? Okay, love him or hate him. He has done wonders for the company because he has really. He has sort of taken the Marvel approach that Marvel took years ago in having all kinds of crossovers and big events and all kinds of great storylines that Marvel did years ago. Hey, you know what? I understand what you're trying to say here with that sort of fake fart noise that you're doing, Anthony. That's very professional of you on the air. However, you know, it's you love him or hate him. He has done a lot of great work for DC in getting a lot of people interested in characters that nobody cared about before, right? Such as Green Lantern.
Hey, well, but I mean, we can actually argue that Geoff Johns is the one who made people interested in Green Lantern, and Dan Didio happened to be in the right place at the right time.
But Dan Didio also, as an editor for DC, was the one that made sure that the comic book 52 came out on time every week for 52 weeks. And you know, for a comic book to be able to publish something like that and to have the organization for a comic like that to be able to do that, I think it's phenomenal.
Yeah, but all 52 issues weren't good. Anybody can print a comic every week. It's printing a good comic every week that's tricky.
A lot of comic fans would disagree with you on that.
Well, you know, it's a special show because this show will run 2 hours and we'll have an extra hour. We'll have an extra hour of Chris and Anthony arguing. And you can, you know, purchase that, I believe. Right, guys?
Yeah, this is our PBS telethon. For those of you who would like to send more money to hear Chris and Anthony argue.
All right, well, listen. Please. DC is making some moves, and that's a good thing, right? And DC is taking a guy that's seasoned. DC is looking like they are putting some effort into their comic business. And then that's a good thing. Well, you
absolutely.
Know. All right. We're going to move on. I want to talk a little bit about August's comic numbers. There's a few things I want to talk about. You know, as we all know, comics have kind of – the monthly circulation of comics have steadily been falling for the last, I think, 720 years, I believe. But it's just been a steady decline. Yeah. And like, for example, August, the month of August saw no comics sell over 100,000 copies, which has been, you know, a disturbing trend as of late. It was unheard of before.
Yeah.
But now it seems, I think it might be the third or fourth time in the last 12 months that's happened. And so, I mean, is this, you know, does this spell the demise of the monthly? You know, I want your guys' take on the gradual decrease in circulation.
Okay, well, you know what? I want to actually forward that question to James, because I think of the four of us, he's probably the youngest guy here, and I want to know what his take on the new comic book industry is like. And do you see the comic book industry surviving? Are we going to go to a point where we want to read our comics on tablet now?
Well, I don't know. I'm kind of a Marvel elitist here, so I can't really weigh my opinion on DC. But when it comes to comic books, they are transitioning slowly to online, and it's only getting better and easier to access. A couple of years ago, they would say, hey, try it out, you know, pay this amount of money and see a couple comics. But now you've got a lot more selection, cheaper prices, just easier access to see the comics that you actually want to see. But for me, it's always about print. I mean, if you can have something in your hand holding it, that's way more valuable than anything else.
And you know, like, I think that, that there will always be a market for the collector that wants that tactile experience, right? That wants to be able to pick up the actual comic itself. But increasingly, there is a market for someone who just wants to read the stories and they don't care about what, you know, in what method they actually read it. So if they read it on the computer, that's fine. If they read it from the actual comic, that's fine too. The other thing, like, I mean, in some ways, it's not a fair comparison, right? 70 years ago, you didn't have video games. You didn't have television with a million channels. You didn't have iPods. You didn't have downloadable music. Like, the competition for the entertainment hour is ferocious now. And I think what we're actually seeing is just people don't have enough time to read comics and to download music and to watch movies and to play video games. Like, so they're just picking and choosing now.
Well, the weird thing that I see out of this is at the moment in history where comic book properties have exploded into the mainstream is the same moment in history where comic book monthly readership is at the lowest level.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it says. Obviously, the popularity of Spider-Man has never been greater, and yet the monthly sales of The Amazing Spider-Man has never been less. Well, and it's kind of like I don't know what it is.
And this James, go ahead.
No, sorry. I just wanted to weigh in with the Spider-Man. The reason why the Amazing Spider-Man is at the lowest sales now is because of Editor-in-Chief Joe Quesada's choice to just use magic as the be-all and end-all and wipe away the last 30 years of history.
Okay, all right, all right.
Fair enough
on Spider-Man, okay. But hold on. I'm going to stick with the point.
Yeah.
If we use X-Men or Batman or whatever, Avengers, same thing.
Okay, but hold on. Now and this brings up a very interesting point because it's something that you and I have talked about for the past couple of years, you and I have talked about it a few times. Are the characters bigger than the writers or the storytellers and all that kind of thing? So are we saying that, you know, Spider-Man as a character is bigger than what the comic books have to offer? Certainly we see that in Iron Man. You know, the Iron Man movie is drawing a bigger crowd than the people that are reading Iron Man. So is this something that is a trend towards with new readership? Are people more interested in the character than actually reading comics?
You know, you could have a point there, but I guess it's weird that you'd figure, you know, the Iron Man movie is doing so great and the second movie is doing so great and the flipping there's Iron Man pajamas out there right now and all that kind of stuff, is you'd figure Iron Man would be selling more than,
Batman, Superman.
Yeah, exactly. You know. But they would be selling more than they did a decade ago, and they're not. And it's almost like comics are the domain of like just a small group of I don't want to give them a title, but you know, nerds isn't maybe the right title, but purists,
that's the right title.
Purists is maybe a better word. And yet everybody, you know, like millions of people will enjoy an Iron Man product out on the movie screens, but literally, you know, 50,000 will partake in the monthly comic.
Right. And, you know, I think there are lots of new readers out there, but I think there are a lot of people out there who are more interested in the movies as well. So I think there's a play which with people are interested in what's going on with the characters. But, you know, I think comics are still growing. And I think all the best ideas are still coming from comics. And certainly we've got, you know, I know we talk about it ad nauseum sometimes with The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
They're coming out with a new TV series. But you know what? I still say all the best stories and all the best ideas are coming from comic books.
Right. You know what? You have a point with comic properties are growing in their popularity, but comic monthly titles are not. And they're waning.
But you know what? This is something that, you know, really isn't new. I remember even back when I used to work in comic book stores, comics like The Preacher, they would the trades would outsell the numbers of monthly readers on a month-to-month basis. So you would maybe have, you know, 70 people buying every trade, whereas you'd have like 30 people buying it as a monthly title, right?
Okay.
So I'm saying that, you know, the characters themselves are becoming more important, and people aren't necessarily interested in the monthlies anymore.
All right. I mean, I wanted to just revisit it too. Even if I look at the top five selling comics basically deal with two properties. Brightest Day is number 1 and 2, and Avengers titles are number 3, 4, and 5. Right? And you know what? Once you get past the Avengers, you know, you hit Amazing Spider-Man and Batman, and they're in the low 70,000s. And I'm thinking in the '70s, if Batman and Spider-Man was at 70,000, they'd be canceled.
Oh well, for sure. And you know what's interesting is that years ago, Marvel used to have a cutoff of about 25,000 issues every month. That if it went below that, it wasn't profitable enough, right? So what's, you know, for an independent would be, you know, incredible, right? But for a big company like Marvel, it's not enough.
All right. So basically, James, who's a younger reader, he's still loyal to print. Okay, but Anthony, I know that you are starting to partake. Now, you've signed up for that Marvel the Marvel online thing, right?
Yeah, the Marvel Unlimited. I actually can't say enough good things about it. I'll be writing an article for comicbookdaily.com soon about it. They have about 7,000 comics on there right now that you can read. They're not necessarily new. The newest comic is probably about 6 months old. But for $60 a year, I have unlimited access. I can read them as many times as I want. I've read the entire Brubaker Captain America run, which I had never got a chance to read yet. I've read the first 12 issues of the Jeff Loeb Hulk, which is great. I've caught up on about 3 years of X-Men stuff, which I didn't have a chance to read. And, I mean, it's fantastic.
Okay, so, I mean, I admittedly am not a subscriber to the Marvel Universe comic book online thing. So when you say there's 7,000 comic books, now I have to ask, of the 7,000, how many would you actually want to read?
So essentially, if I were to – because, well, I mean, you yourself told me that the Brubaker Captain America stuff was great.
It's awesome.
And I definitely need to read that.
Yeah.
So two trades, right, would have been what, like $40 basically?
Yeah, at least,
So like three trades worth, which is probably the first 15 issues or something like that.
Yeah.
Would have been my $60.
Okay.
So just reading the Brubaker Captain Americas, I'm already free and clear in terms of actual
money.
Okay,
fair enough.
Well, let me ask you, and this is what comic books are all about. Let me ask you how you feel, because you do both, right? I mean, you collect comics as well. Is the experience the same? Is reading online and then just, you know, hitting the little X on the top right to get rid of that thing? And is it the same? You get the same experience as picking up the comic and knowing that you have it in your little box and your little plastic thing or whatever. Can you elaborate on that a bit for us?
You don't get exactly the same experience, because there is something about, you know, bringing home your stack of comics on the Wednesday night and being able to look through them all and being able to, you know, have a good run of reading what you picked up. But it's not possible to read everything, right? There is, you know, 75, 80 years worth of comic book history now, and it just isn't possible to read everything. But we want to. As collectors, we want to be able to know all these stories. We want to be able to understand the universe and the history of these shared universes. So for me, I can't collect everything that I want to be able to check out. It's just not possible. But I want to be able to have a good sense of maybe what's going on. What Marvel Digital does really, really well is they have basically a lot of stuff from the last 10 years, and they have a lot of stuff from the 60s and 70s that would have been out of somebody's price range to be able to read, including some of the really old, like a proto-monster type stuff, like from Strange Tales and from Journey into Mystery. Like, they have some of that on there. So there is also an aspect of almost an archival nature,
right,
to the digital comics as well, where they take the best possible quality. So, I mean, the Amazing Fantasy 15 that I read on Marvel Digital Unlimited, it will never be like it will be the best quality Amazing Fantasy 15 that I ever read in my entire life. So, I mean, there's something to that as well.
All right. Well, I mean, the debate rages, and it sounds like initially the people are actually still enjoying both, but there obviously is the trend, though, of monthlies decreasing in circulation. All right, let's move on. The Hollywood Reporter reports that Warner Brothers
nice
that Warner Brothers is filing some sort of legal oppositions to the heirs of the Schuster and Siegel whole Superman who controls Superman bit. So the whole thing, guys, here is the Superman 2011-2012, I believe, The rights to Superman are supposed to revert back to the families,
right?
And Warner Brothers DC is putting in some sort of court oppositions to this thing,
yeah,
to try to keep the rights to Superman.
So right? Basically, what they're saying is that the rights have now Warner Brothers have used up the rights, and that they're reverting back to the Schuster estate.
Right, yeah. Now, do they have a? I haven't read too much about it. Now there's the lawyer Schuster, sorry, DC Warner is claiming that the lawyer, some guy named Toberoff, is actually just trying to make a play at controlling the Superman thing. And of course the lawyer's saying, hey, listen, I'm just doing my job for the family. Now, Anthony, didn't Disney go through this with Mickey Mouse or something a year ago? Or
It was quite a few years ago now, because basically in the States and throughout Europe, right, a lot of intellectual property, after a certain number of years since the death of the creator, it reverts to the public domain. So characters like, you know, Tarzan, like Sherlock Holmes, like Alice in Wonderland, like essentially those have become public domain characters now, right? And a few years ago, what Disney did was they lobbied Congress in the United States to change the rules, so essentially they always now have the rights to Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, there used to be a sort of a statute of limitations based on the rights for all these different characters, and I believe it was 70 or 75 years. I'm not entirely too sure on that.
We'll comment anyway. We're always happy to comment, only having half the information.
Yeah, that's what we do best. And if anybody wants to correct us, here, please email us. It wouldn't be the first time, and we may even give you credit on the air or
no prize.
But anyways, I believe it's 70 or 75 years, and what's happening now is that the rights to the Schuster, the Superman is coming due again. And so, of course, DC wants to maintain the rights of these characters, because I mean, Superman is like the flagship character. And of course, this is nothing new to the corporate world, as Anthony was saying earlier. This happened with Mickey Mouse and before, and for whatever reason, I believe that Disney now has been able to lobby and it's gone through Senate hearings in the States that, you know, no matter what happens, nobody else can use the Mickey Mouse character as a public domain character, which is what usually happens after about a number of years, where sort of doesn't matter who owns it, the character becomes public domain. Am I right here, Anthony?
Yeah. I mean, and the law is like unofficially even called the Mickey Mouse Law now, right? Because they managed to be, and essentially what I think will happen is DC will be able to do some sort of wheeling and dealing, and they'll be able to, you know, do the same thing with Superman. Right now, I'm sure they'll give the estate something. Like, they'll have to be able to give the estate something, because the estate of Joe Schuster has like some, you know, like actual legitimate legal claims.
Sure, absolutely, yeah.
But there's no way that Warner Brothers will give up Superman.
No, I mean that is the title. I mean, Superman and Batman are one and two, two and one. I don't even know who was better.
Bread and butter.
Yeah, like it's.
Which one's the butter?
I'm not going to go there, okay, but you know what? I think they're one and two, and I can't see Warner Brothers giving up this battle anytime soon.
Well, I mean, I just hope it all works out equitably, and everybody gets their just deserves, I guess. Hey,
that is not the saying.
Oh. What's the saying?
Did you say just deserves?
Just deserves.
I think it's just desserts.
Just desserts?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. On that note, let's move it along.
Anthony is very, very concerned about Walter getting these proper sayings, by the way.
Well, Anthony, as you know, I am ESL.
Yeah. Anthony is very concerned. Being the producer, he wants to cut in every once in a while and make sure that we get these things correct.
You know, I just want to make sure that you guys can live up to the high quality level of professionalism that you really should. That's the main
reason.
That
is something we aspire to every week. All right. You know what? We have one more item of industry news.
Two more.
Well, wow, two more items of industry news before I move on. I was kidding. Our producer, Anthony, was waving his hands.
Okay.
I didn't know. I think he was just hot.
Okay, so you know what? Go ahead, Walt. No, I seem to be mistaken in my timing here.
See, yeah. Okay, Anthony, let's tie his hands behind his back.
Yes.
All right, listen. Actually, Anthony sent me a link today for this kind of DC Universe Online. I've never played a video game since, I think, Pac-Man.
Space Invaders?
Space Invaders, yeah. Maybe, yeah.
Pong?
Yeah, Pong was before. But this thing, DC Universe Online, from Sony Online Entertainment, this link was absolutely just phenomenal. And apparently it's some sort of huge online game that's coming out in early November. And I haven't got a clue of what I'm supposed to do and how it works. And but it's something my kids, I think, would love. I mean, you guys are the gamers. What's this mean for DCU?
So The DC Universe Online is one of the massive multiplayer online games that's coming out, a lot like World of Warcraft, which is the most popular MMO in the world right now. And you can be either a hero or a villain, and you help either the heroes or villains in the DC Universe on various missions and hoping to save the world, et cetera, et cetera. The link that's out there that you can all check out, you know, just check out DC Universe Online cinematic opening. A great, great 6 minutes real like comic book story,
right? Tremendous.
It's really got people really excited. You know, it'll be, and I think a lot of people are going to pick this title up.
I have to say that it looks absolutely phenomenal. I mean, but the problem that I have with it is that it looks great, but I know that these are just cinematic scenes, and they're obviously designed for the advertising of it. When I go to actually finally play the game, I'm going to be some chump with, like, not anywhere near the kind of powers that Batman would have or Superman or anything. I'll be like, I don't know, Flame On Boy or something.
You'll be like,
that.
Black Lightning, who they won't let into the dinner party or something.
Exactly. I'll be Aquaman, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean,
But having said all that, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Having said all that, I am the first in line to go and buy this game because I think it looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, James, now you are going to pick this one up? Or
I'm not a DC fan, but after watching the six and a half minute trailer, I am definitely picking it up. It could have been a standalone movie in just the style and quality of animation that they had.
And little 411 for you all, right? The Kevin Conroy, who's the voice of Batman in the animated series, he is doing the voice of Batman. And James Marsters, who does Spike in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, he is the voice of Lex Luthor.
They got some
top quality. And Mark Hamill is the Joker again.
Mark Hamill, wait a minute. Mark Hamill, the...
Luke Skywalker. I don't know if Walt, I don't know if you know that, but, you know, for years during the Batman animated series, Mark Hamill played the Joker, and he did it for a long time. And not only did he do it for the series, he did it for a number of made-for-DVD movies. And not only did he do that, but for the recent, came out in 2009, Batman Arkham Asylum video game, not only did we have Mark Hamill play the Joker, we had the original cast from the whole Batman animated series, was he had Kevin Conroy played Batman, and the girl who played Harley Quinn was the same voice. So everybody that played in the video game was actually in the animated series. So, you know, they're getting all these great voice actors that we're already familiar with, and it looks like it's going to be phenomenal.
Well, the thing that impresses me, the old timer of the group, is that, you know, here we are on our quality show that's dedicated to comic books and comic book movies. We're actually talking about comic book video games, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, it's cracked our agenda, It must be important.
Oh, it has to be.
All right.
It has to be.
All right. I think that's all I have for industry news today, guys.
Well, I have one more piece, because we all know that people who love comic books also love junk food. And Hostess Snack Cakes has a bunch of JLA snack cakes that are coming out on the market. We have some Flash cakes, which are some Flash cupcakes. But my personal favorites are the Green Lantern snowballs, except they're called glow balls.
Well, certainly marketing is nothing new to the DC Universe. They've been doing this for a number of years now. And why not have a number of different cupcakes and Twinkie and fruit pies and whatever? You know, I mean, okay, hold on. Now, let's just revert back for a minute here. Let's not forget that in the 70s, I know this is a long time for you, for a lot of you guys, but in the 70s, back there used to be a lot of ads for Hostess fruit pies in comic books, and they would have ads by Batman and Superman and all those kind of guys, and they would be like, you know, saving the day with Hostess Twinkie cake. So why not expand on that now?
It's, you know, I mean, I have to agree. Now, mind you, the fruit pie wasn't color green and wasn't a Hulk fruit pie back then, though.
No, yeah, right? You're right.
And, however, the like, super nerd in me, though, was impressed that the Green Lantern one wasn't a Twinkie because the Twinkie's yellow
That wouldn't work, right?
Guys, this opens up a whole myriad of possibilities here. Can you imagine, like, the Power Girl half moons?
How about the Power Girl cupcakes?
Or even that.
Yes.
I mean, you know.
That's not right.
Mind-boggling.
That's awful. The Spider-Man sticky toffee.
Oh.
You know?
Yes. All right. Well, you know what?
Chris, save us, Chris.
Speaking of Spider-Man, I happen to have a wonderful Spider-Man interlude to from the Spider-Man animated series back from the 1967 series from the Krantz Studios that were actually filmed here in Canada. Did you know that? What a wonderful show this is that you find out all this historical stuff. Here it is, Spider-Man the Scarf.
Yeah, such a great tune. And like I said before, that tune swings. And I believe that tune was second. It just lost out for the Hawaii Five-0 theme.
You know, they're bringing that show back, actually. They brought that show back.
Good Lord.
Hawaii Well, you know, if in case you weren't too sure, this next segment of our show has been brought to you by Wonder Woman.
Has been brought to you by.
It's going to be brought to you by Wonder Woman. Please buy my comic book. For the love of God, buy my book. Sorry, I kind of blew that one, but you know what? It's all good.
Sorry, Wonder Woman. Well...
I actually own almost.
Reimbursed.
I own almost all your comics, Wonder Woman. I love you.
All right, there. That was disturbing on a number of levels. So, ladies and gentlemen, we thought we would do a little bit of a listener mailbag as the last section. We actually get a lot of letters, both either from actual snail mail sent to McMaster Studio, or from the emailed to us. And once we are a tech guys look through for any sort of letter bombs, anthrax, or viruses, we then open them up and we start reading through. And I thought I would take a couple and ask Walt and Chris, you know, to answer some of them today. So, dear Chris and Walt, who is your favorite comic book character and why? From James in Pickle Lake, Ontario.
Walt, go ahead.
Well, James in Pickle Lake, first of all, thanks for writing in. Mine is Conan. Mine always has been Conan. And I think I suffer from the 40-something man disease of wanting to, basically kill people and drink all day and womanize as a living. So that's what draws me to Conan. Conan is just the greatest escapism for me. It always has been. Even as a kid, I would fantasize about kind of living in that era and stuff. So for me, it's Conan.
Okay, so you know what? I know people are going to say right away, it's obviously Power Girl. However, those who know me know it's not actually Power Girl. It's actually Captain America. It's my favorite comic book character. I have all the issues aside from the Golden Age ones. In fact, looking around the studio, I even bring mementos of Captain America around with me because I'm such a fan. I've always thought that Captain America was the ultimate hero. Here's a guy that was willing to sacrifice everything he had because he wasn't fit enough for the army to subject himself to scientific experiments to help the greater good, and he ended up becoming this Captain America. And he's a guy that really has no special powers other than super strength and super ability and all that kind of stuff. But you know what? He's great.
Other than those special powers, he had no special powers other than super strength and
come
super ability.
Okay, no more so than an extremely fit man.
Like Conan.
Yeah.
All right. Well, James, I hope that answers your question. Let's move to the next letter. Dear Walt, I love you and Chris on the show, and I've been listening, and I've been going on comicbookdaily.com to listen. I recently have been checking out some of your articles. Where do you come up with some of your ideas for your undervalued spotlight?
Those are totally books, comic books that I think are undervalued, and that's actually a public service that I want to provide to the collectors out there. The trap that a lot of collectors fall into is if they buy a comic that they like, a lot of them will assume that a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, if they go sell it, they'll make money. And that's just not true in the comic book industry. And then this is kind of my way of helping out. You got to remember, when you're buying a comic book, you're buying it individually. You're buying a single issue or two or three issues. You're buying it off of a retailer that is absorbing overhead at a convention to sell it or payroll at a store to sell it. And price is reflected in that. When you go back to sell it, you're going to sell it either to these guys again or online. And online is a very unkind place to sell a comic book because prices are depressed because there's so much available. So my undervalued spotlight is a way to guide people to books that I think will actually give them a return on their investment.
Yeah, no, and Chris, why don't you tell us a little bit about your column that's starting up on comicbookdaily.com?
Well, you know, I've had a few different couple weeks now, and basically I'm going to be talking a little bit about the history of comics and you know, my role of and my thoughts and opinions of what's happened over the years of my being in the industry. Believe it or not, I've actually been in the industry since 1980, 79, 80, and I've seen a lot happen over the years, and this is sort of what I'm talking about in my blog and in my columns, and one of my first few blogs have been talking about comic book history and that kind of thing, and that's really what I talk about in my classes even.
Believe it or not, his blogs actually are coherent, too. So.
That's all great. Right. Thanks a lot, Walt.
All
thanks.
Right. Well, I'm sure that. Oh, sorry, I forgot to. That question was from Marcy in Hamilton.
Marcy. Oh, Marcy. Thanks, Marcy.
Thank you very much. Okay. All right.
Come up
so,
to the shop, Marcy.
I think we have time probably for one, maybe two more, but we'll definitely do one more.
Probably just one, but go ahead.
Dear Chris.
Oh.
What is that clinking sound when the show is on? And this is from Dave in London, Ontario.
Well, you know, over the years of doing this show, our voices get a little bit parched, and so unfortunately, that's just I have a glass of water next to me every time, and it's a little bit of ice in the water, and I don't mean to clink it in front of the microphone, but sometimes it just happens.
Wow, Chris, that's okay. Yeah, that is exactly what happens, Chris. Thank you. Anthony, maybe we should move on to the next one because I can't keep a straight face.
Can't keep a straight face on Chris. All right. So, Chris, do we have enough time for one last mailbag question?
If we do, do you have any more left, or is that it? Or is that we've got we're 4 minutes left. 4 minutes.
I have an entire bag of questions.
Okay. Give her one more. One more.
All right. Dear Walt and Chris, I love listening to your show every week. But sometimes I wish you would play the Aquaman song even more. Where can I find that Aquaman song? And this is from Roger in Godrich, Ontario.
Chris, I don't know. I mean, I'm lucky. Roger, I'm the lucky guy here. Chris has it on his laptop, and it's ready to roll every week, and I enjoy it. I have no idea where to get it. Chris.
You know, I found it on the internet one day, and I really have no idea where anybody could possibly try to find it. If you know what, email me, and I'll try to send you a copy of it.
Roger, I'm glad we could help, Roger. Yeah. I'm glad we can help. Thanks.
Thank you very much, guys. Okay. I'm sure all your fans appreciate your answers.
Well, unfortunately, that's the end of our mailbag here and the end of the show. As always, we do appreciate your comments or questions, and we love you listening to the show. And if you do have any questions, please email us at chris.owen@mohawkcollege.ca or at mailbox@bibbycomics.com. And please go and enjoy the show and support your comic book retailer and have a wonderful, wonderful Wednesday. Anything to add there, Walt? You look like you're about to say something here.
Well, yeah. I want to say see everyone next week, and I'll let Anthony finish off.
So next week we have a very special guest. We have the wrestler Brimstone is on, and he will be here to talk a little bit about his life, his career, but also promoting his new comic book, Border Hounds. So we're looking forward to having a chat with him.
All right.
Sounds great. I look forward to always meeting new comic book artists and creators. Walter, any last words of wisdom?
No. Guys, thanks for a great show. And
no.
James.
No.
I am not wise at all.
I want to thank Anthony and James for coming on the show this week.
It's been a pleasure and an honor, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Always happy to be here, you guys.
All right, guys. See everyone next week.
Have a great day, everybody. And please, you know what? Go to your local comic book retailer and try something new. Bye.
Excelsior.
Excelsior.